You're listening to Arena. Alas, what wickedness to swallow flesh into our own flesh, to fatten our greedy bodies by cramming in other bodies, to have one living creature fed by the death of another. Those words are by the Roman poet Ovid, but they are what frame a new collection of contemporary poems by Victoria Kenefick, who is in this her first collection, unflinchingly looks at the human body and the lengths it will go to fuel and fast and cannibalise its flesh and the flesh of others. Eat or We Both Starve is the title of Victoria Kenefick, and Ken, she joins me now. Victoria, if the epigram by Ovid wasn't strong enough beer, the first poem in the collection sets the tone with a pretty shocking reading of an everyday event. Do you think poetry should be give you a good shock?
I was listening earlier today to an interview Claire Byrne did with a gentleman, I can't remember his name now, about water therapy and shocking yourself with cold water in order to reduce inflammation and to feel better. And I just thought how, well, I need to try that firstly, but also how relevant it was to action, because I think poetry can do so many different things. I think it can comfort, I think it can reassure, but also I think it has the ability to shock, and I think sometimes it's good to be shocked. And I think this poem, you know, shocks on many levels. I suppose it's quite visceral and it's quite dramatic and quite gross, one might say. But I suppose I was looking at inverting traditional tropes of cannibalism, and certainly around the Catholic Church as well, you know, an inversion of eating Christ's body, because here the speaker consumes the female body, maybe even the Virgin Mary, or certainly the archetypical female body, and maybe the devouring mother, an inversion of that. So I think it's kind of setting the tone for the rest of the book, looking at, as the book does, issues around, as you mentioned, the body and consumption, capitalism, religion, the family, all of these things. So it's kind of consuming the collective unconscious as well.
Right. So the title of that first poem is Learning to Eat My Mother, Where My Mother is the Teacher. So will you read that for us?
I'd be delighted to. Learning to Eat My Mother, Where My Mother is the Teacher. Where did I start? Yes. With the heart enlarged, its chambers stretched through caring. In this body, feeling is what the body is. The alert heart, an alarm rings out in all hours of the night, flashing red and white. Oh, is it in defiance or defeat? I don't know. I eat it anyway, raw, still warm. The size of my fist, I love it. Strange, a vegetarian resorting to cannibalism. He is disgusted with me. Wouldn't you begin with the outside? Sweating, I pry open the rib cage. I do not want to eat her ribs, but I do. Then strip her fingers of meat. I hold them tenderly in my mouth. Watch her blue eyes well up out of love, I assume. I move from heart to ribs, fingers to spongy lungs, buoyant, porous, melt in the mouth. The eyes are tougher than expected. Aqueous humour slithers down my throat. A surprise. It's minty. I know what you're thinking. I left the brain. No, not so. I have consumed that organ piecemeal. Sweet morsel since my teeth came in. It tastes like the sound of sirens you don't know are screaming until they suddenly stop.
Learning to Eat My Mother, Where My Mother is the Teacher, from Victoria Kenefick's Eat or We Both Starve. My goodness, it's a dog-eat-dog world out there, however you view life. You also say in Researching the Famine, another one of the poems, that all we do is eat, as though that were just commonplace. But you take such verbal joy in describing consumption. Is that because you think we need to get a bit of a jolt about how blasé we are about eating?
To an extent, certainly, I think that's true. And I suppose it's about the mindlessness of the way that we consume not only food, And being a vegetarian, I suppose that's something I'm very aware of, how people consume meat. I don't judge it. Let me preface that.
I think you might.
maybe I do. I try very much not to. But certainly, the poems, when I wrote them, maybe tell a different story. I think it's maybe about the awareness that we bring to how we consume not only food, but I think how we consume idealized versions of what it means to be a woman, and how we consume young women and their coming of age stories, and really try and appropriate them for our own means. And so I think this book, in many respects, is a coming of age book about what it means to be a young woman growing up in a world where the world wants to eat you. And I think, in a sense, what I'm doing is I'm biting back.
Yes, and it's very interesting too, how you approach young women and this almost threat that their body is under, and how in medieval times women took the notion of starving their body or doing extreme things with their bodies to in some way give themselves some kind of power.
Very much so. And there's a broken sequence, I call it, in the book, which is a collection of poems about these saints and martyrs from the medieval period and beyond. And they certainly engaged in very extreme behaviours around eating, around self-flagellation, around self-harm, that obviously when we look back at that, we would view it, I think, now as being, you know, a huge cause of worry and indeed, you know, perhaps indicating significant mental health issues. But then it was, as you say, and maybe even now, a way of gaining power, and a way, I suppose, of shrinking back on one level to preserve the self, maybe free of emotional entanglements because they were women of religion, and it being a strategy of survival and perhaps the only way that they could survive. And indeed, many of them that did go through this dreadful, I suppose, sequence of self-harm, like with anorexia and so on, they actually thrived later on, if they did survive it, becoming, you know, quite significantly important members of the institutional Catholic Church.
Yes, we're talking about people like St. Catherine of Siena, who would have starved herself and then had well, that she levitated and went into a form of ecstasy from the starvation, which made her, in probably the eyes of the Church, saintly.
Exactly. And I suppose it is, as you say, it's kind of taking that power back. And I suppose we're so comfortable with our self-indulgence, especially with Easter coming up, that I think there is this fascination and maybe discomfort around denial. And I think particularly in today's culture, we're very uncomfortable with that idea for many reasons, historical and cultural and societal. But I think that it's very interesting looking at those women from that perspective and how they use their bodies maybe as being the only way that they had to express themselves and to be powerful, as you say.
Now, again, in your fantastic collection, Eat or We Both Starve, there are extremes, Victoria. And when it comes to Veronica Giuliani, she fairly goes for it. Will you read Hunger Strike by Victoria Giuliani for us, please?
Hunger Strikes, Veronica Giuliani, 1660 to 1727. My confessor ordered her to do it. The novice kicked me again and again. Her shoe pummeled my teeth, bloodied my lips. I did not stir or whimper. I kept my mouth open. I remained bruised for weeks. When my face was almost pink again, he prompted me to clean the walls and floor of my cell with my tongue. I licked for hours, scraping up each wisp of skin and hair. My throat became thick with cobwebs, my mind clear as light.
Fantastic. That's Hunger Strike by Victoria Giuliani from Victoria Kenefick's Eat or We Both Starve. And as you say, that's a series of hunger strikes that go along, ending up with yourself. Now, it's not often we come across a collection of poetry that celebrates people like Catherine of Siena, but Audrey Hepburn, Mary Tyler Moore. Where does Mary Tyler Moore come in? Is she another kind of iconic woman who did something with either her appearance or her clothing to try and keep her own power?
Yes, I think with both of those characters, Mary Tyler Moore and Audrey Hepburn, they had this particular kind of star quality, obviously, but also a very unthreatening femininity that was palatable, I think, to audiences and to network executives and moviegoers at the time, that they were beautiful, that they were friendly, that they were non-threatening, and that allowed them to a certain degree maybe to infiltrate the enemy lines, if you like, and to move the narrative forward, I think, in terms of what was expected of women at the time and what women were allowed, quote unquote, to do. So in my Mary Tyler Moore poem, for example, she has the audacity to wear pants when at the time it was never really shown on television before that a 1960s housewife would be, you know, wearing pants, doing housework. She's still doing the housework, of course. So things had a long way to come. Equally with Audrey Hepburn, I think I'm really fascinated by her, particularly, I suppose, because I loved her as a child and looked up to her as being the absolute epitome of feminine perfection. You know, so beautiful, so doe-eyed, so elegant, so graceful. And of course, underneath all of that, grappling with her own issues around anorexia, she developed during rationing in World War II, her difficulties, you know, not making it as a ballerina. And all of these things that she was struggling with that I had no idea when I was a child and a younger person. And I idealized her. And I think that was lovely in one sense, but also, again, quite damaging in terms of what I expected of myself.
Well, we'd love you to read Prayer to Audrey Hepburn, if you would, just to finish,
of
Victoria.
Course. Prayer to Audrey Hepburn. Oh, blessed Audrey of the feline eye flick, jutting bones, slim-hipped androgyny of wartime rationing, I've missed your nightly visitations. I summoned you, carefully cutting around your monochrome face in Mother's fashion magazines, pointing the scissors away from myself as I had been taught, your name an incantation on my lips. I stuck those pieces of you to my pink walls with rolled up sellotape and waited. You came, sheathed in black with the posture of a reed. Hypnotized, I prayed to you for grace, that I could sew my mouth closed like a doll, be a sculpture made of skin. Years later, and there's a person growing in my uterus, my body a building site. I intercede to you again, snip around your slinky silhouette. In scissors' blades, I see myself 13, when you fall out of the shadows, oh, Audrey. Can't stay, you hiss. You stare at me with saucer eyes. I am hungry, you say, hungry like you. I can't help but laugh. I am too big to be a woman. You lean over the bed. I am conscious of my pudgy belly, my rat's nest hair, but you take my face in your hands, kiss me hard, pushing your gorgeous tongue across the length of mine. Afterwards, our seams popping, we shriek with laughter.
Victoria Kinnifig there, reading Prayer to Audrey Hepburn from Eat or We Both Starve, and that's published by Carcanet Press. Victoria, thank you so much. That's it for tonight's show. The programme was researched by Paula Shields. Mark McGraw was on sound. Janice Furphy was the broadcast coordinator. Tonight's show was produced by Sinead E.